morning's reading is from Ecclesiastes 3, 1-8. A time for everything. There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. Philippians 4, 6 and 7. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus.
There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. Something very strange happened this last week, and I think most of us probably had a similar experience. It happened early in the week. I remember it vividly, walking downstairs and opening the curtains and seeing the sun. Do you remember that? You remember that earlier this week? All of a sudden you just open the curtains and you're like, what is that thing in the sky? Like, I felt like it had been a long time since we'd seen the sun. And then it was this bright blue sky and this beautiful shining sun for like most of the day. Like, we haven't had that in a long time. What a pleasant shock to the system, wasn't it? These cold, dark, long winter months that we're in the thick of tend to reflect the way that many people feel about life in general, and perhaps especially at this time of year. And so we're going to be walking over the next few weeks through a series called the February Blahs. We're going to take a look at some of these areas of life that can tend to feel a little heavier than others. This morning, we're going to dive into a theme of anxiety and depression. Next week, we're going to take a look at workplace tension, the idea of how the place, our place of work, or our lack of a place of work can become a real stress and a weight in our lives. The following week, we're going to talk about relationship struggles, not only romantic relationships, but family relationships, friends relationships, and the way that sometimes the heaviness of relationships can really be a damper on our lives. And we're going to wrap up the month with a discussion on spiritual fatigue, how sometimes it feels we feel distant from God. Sometimes our spiritual lives appear to dry up. And what do we do during those seasons of our lives, especially when those seasons linger? Words like the ones from Ecclesiastes might sound flippant. There's a time for everything, a season for every activity under the heavens. They might sound flippant, but they remind us of an important truth, that seasons are a part of life, and that seasons are here to stay. You see, in one sense, life does kind of happen in seasons, and these things are, these periods that we go through, they don't last forever. But the fact that there are down seasons in life is something that is going to stick with us. I was thinking about, you know, over the course of our lives, I'm sure most of us have experienced momentary blahs, whether they lasted for hours or months or years at a time. But many of us can look back at times where we walked through dark times. Maybe it was the stress of school. Maybe you've been out of school for decades, but you can remember the heaviness and the weight of going through school and the stress of exams or the stress of waiting for an acceptance letter. And you remember those difficult times. Maybe it was the stress of a job or a season of difficult finance or an illness that you or someone close to you experienced. Or maybe it was a broken relationship and you look back and say, man, that was a dark time. That was a difficult season of our lives. But you think, but it was a season. And I think that's the experience that most of us can have. And again, seasons last different lengths depending on the people, but it's something that we all experience. Sometimes it's a seasonal lull. But for others, it's something much more than that. And this morning, we're going to talk about what might be seasonally related, this kind of feeling, this down feeling, feeling the heaviness of life. But it might be something more than that. Now, if you've watched television or been on social media at all over the last couple of weeks, you've probably seen this Bell Let's Talk campaign. This is a relatively new thing in recent years, trying to open up conversations about mental health, doing so at a time of year that is difficult for a lot of people. And the reasons for wanting to open up the conversation are kind of obvious. When you look at statistics like these, 41% of depressed women are too embarrassed to seek help. 54% of people believe depression is a personal weakness. And as a result of these and perhaps other statistics and factors, 80% of depressed people are not currently having any treatment. And so that's why we need to talk about these things. And that's why we need to talk about them here. I was so encouraged and impressed with Craig Bauman 3 weeks ago, one of our mission partners, coming here to share about this exciting kind of new stage of life and new venture that his family is embarking on. And yet really 80% of his time up here sharing was talking about the darkness of depression that he's been struggling with over the last year of his life. And I felt like as soon as he said the word, it just brought this like sense of freedom that we can talk about these things, we can be honest with one another, and we can help each other through these seasons. But sometimes the questions come, and the question of Job that he asked after his life began to fall apart, where then is my hope? Who can see any hope for me? These are the questions that many people ask at different stages of their lives, and maybe you're asking them this morning. Maybe you just barely dragged yourself in here, and you're asking, well, where's my hope? Can anyone point to hope in my situation? I was reminded of a section from Yann Martel's book, The Life of Pi. Some of you may have read it when it came out a number of years ago, may have seen the movie. And the story is basically about a young boy who's stranded on this boat after the ship he was on is sunk in the ocean. So he's stranded on this boat, and this is what he writes in one of his entries or one of his reflections, if you will. Faith in God is an opening up, a letting go, a deep trust, a free act of love. But sometimes it was so hard to love. Sometimes my heart was sinking so fast with anger, desolation, and weariness. I was afraid it would sink to the very bottom of the Pacific, and I would not be able to lift it back up. At such moments, I tried to elevate myself. I would touch the turban I had made with the remnants of my shirt, and I would say aloud, "This is God's hat." I would pat my pants and say aloud, "This is God's attire." I would point to Richard Parker and say aloud, "This is God's cat." I would point to the lifeboat and say aloud, "This is God's ark." I would spread my hands wide and say aloud, "These are God's wide acres." I would point to the sky and say aloud, "This is God's ear." And in this way, I would remind myself of the creation and of my place in it. But God's hat was always unraveling. God's pants were falling apart. God's cat was a constant danger. God's ark was a jail. God's wide acres were slowly killing me. God's ear didn't seem to be listening. Despair was a heavy blackness that let no light in or out. It was a hell beyond expression. I thank God it always passed. A school of fish appeared around the net, or a knot cried out to be re-knotted, or I thought of my family, of how they were spared this terrible agony. The blackness would stir and eventually go away, and God would remain a shining point of light in my heart. The scene reminds us that we need to take action so we don't sink too deep. It reminds us that the darkness can come and go, but it also reminds us that there is always hope. I saw a commercial recently online. It's a commercial that aired in Ireland, and it's a very powerful one where they have these little segments of these different men, and they're reading what becomes obvious are excerpts from suicide notes. And so they're reading about, you know, I'm sorry for all of the pain that this will cause. I hope you can move on. And it goes from one man to the next reading these notes. And as you're watching it, you're thinking about, oh my gosh, like he lost a son maybe, or maybe it was his parent, or maybe it was a best friend, or maybe it was a spouse. And you're thinking about this. And then halfway through the commercial, it turns, and they all turn to face the camera and say, "I wrote these words 10 years ago. I wrote these words 3 years ago." And you realize that they were reading their own suicide notes that they never followed through with, thankfully. But how did they? And this is what I thought when I watched the commercial. I'm like, what was it that stopped this process? What was it that intervened and that put them on a road to health and life? I heard a story a little while back about three men in the Netherlands who got together to have a conversation because one of them had discovered that if you type the words, "I want to kill myself," into Google, the number one response in the search engine was a link to a video of seven ways to end your life. And they thought, this is not okay. The top response when someone is searching in a time of despair can't be, "This is how to do it." And so you put their tech skills to work and were able that now apparently in the Netherlands, if you type that in, the top result is a website that says you don't have to. And it provides resources and help. And I wonder, what is it that we can do and what voice can we have for the people who are going through despair around us? Can we let people know that this isn't permanent, that this isn't the way it has to go, and that we're here for them? Reminds me of a lyric from the David Crowder Band song, "Rescue is Coming." He says, "There's nothing wrong with me. It's just that I believe things could get better." Some of us will struggle. Many of us will struggle with the darkness. And some of us who aren't struggling with the darkness have a responsibility and an opportunity to help those who are going through it. And so this morning, I'm honored to be able to invite one of our own, Shauna Percy, to come up and talk with us about how we can survive the seasons of anxiety and depression and how we can learn to help one another along the way. Why don't you give a warm welcome to Shauna this morning?
Good morning. Many of you know me, but some may not. So I'll just start by saying that I'm a widow. I am remarried, but being a widow is part of my identity. I'm 5 years out, and this past year I went to a conference called Camp Widow. And there I was speaking with a fellow widower, and I was saying to her, you know, I just love the analogy of the seasons. I love how in our culture, we can look all around us. I don't love this part, but in the winter, we look around us and it seems very cold and there's death everywhere we look. Nothing is living, it's barren. But then the spring comes, and when the spring comes, there's hope. And these green little shoots spring up from the ground. It's like, oh, I thought that that was all death, but there is still life there. It was just hiding under the ground in the winter months. And this lady looked me straight in the eyes and she said, "I'm from Florida." So lesson number one, know your audience. Today we're talking about anxiety and depression, and my hope is to help those who live in the sunshine state most of the time to have a better understanding what it's like to live in the cold, barren north, and also to bring hope to those living in a winter season to find beauty in it and relief knowing that one day a new season will come. The term depression is sometimes used as a catch-all phrase. It's used flippantly in our society as an all-compassing word for a condition that actually has quite significant variations. For example, I've lived with situational depression, otherwise known as circumstantial depression. For me, that means change the situation, change the depression. For other people, it doesn't work that way. Some people are living with SAD, otherwise known as seasonal affective disorder. SAD is a type of depression related to the seasons, and as the seasons change, the depression changes. Clinical depression, however, works very differently. Clinical depression is a mood disorder that is not shifted by seasons or circumstance. Psychotic depression is something that my first husband, Neil, lived with. What that meant was when he got depressed, he would get paranoid. And every time he did, he accumulated new fears that joined the old fears that he had, making every episode more complex than the one that preceded it. In his mind, his fears were recorded as facts. Then there is postpartum depression. We have a lot of babies in this church. People have been very busy here. And that also potentially means that we may have a number of parents who are living with postpartum depression. I wanted to share something with you this morning. So I have this book called The Relaxation and Stress Reduction Workbook, the 6th edition. And I've had this workbook for a while, and a couple years ago, as I was looking through it, I was reminded of a questionnaire that I had filled out. At the end of the survey, it says, of those with a score of over 300 for the past year, almost 80% will get sick in the near future. So the purpose of this questionnaire is to look at recent events and then our vulnerability to illness. So we all understand the goal here, right? The goal is to have a score of below 300. My score was 1,247. It's been a while since I filled out the questionnaire, so when I found this book again, I thought, A, how am I still alive and not seriously ill? And B, boy, did my first husband's death take a toll on me. And it did, but yesterday, as I was having a closer look at this questionnaire, I realized something that I haven't realized since I obviously filled it out. And what I realized was that I didn't complete this questionnaire when my first husband died. I actually completed it after our first daughter was born. It's not quite understood why postpartum depression occurs. A change in hormones may be one factor, but a significant change in lifestyle likely also plays a role, because it's been found that men can also become depressed after a new baby is born too. In short, there are some forms of depression that visit us from time to time, during certain seasons of our lives, and others that have moved in and taken up residence, and we don't know when they're going to leave. Anxiety is depression's close cousin. Sometimes it lives on its own, and sometimes it likes to share a room with depression. Like depression, anxiety is caused by a combination of factors, including changes in the brain and environmental stress. There are also various forms of anxiety, such as post-traumatic stress disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, panic disorder, and social anxiety, just to name a few. One growing factor that is contributing to anxiety in our culture and in our people is device addiction. There's a new phrase that has been coined as device-olation, and the term is so perfectly fitting because it captures how our devices give the illusion of connectedness when in actuality they are breeding isolation, which is a factor for both anxiety and depression. So how can we reconnect? Let's look at two factors, one vulnerability and the other nature. Vulnerability is one path to connectedness. I heard a story just the other day of a wife who was living with depression, and she went to this conference, and one of the speakers at the conference, who also lives with depression and studies psychology, had spoken on the topic. So after she went up to the gentleman and she said, I live with depression and I'm on medication and I feel so much better that I can tell you this, but please don't tell my husband because he doesn't know. At the end of the conference, her husband went up to the speaker and said to the speaker, I'm living with depression. My wife doesn't know because if she learns that I'm living with depression and on medication for it, she's going to see me as being someone who's weak, so please don't tell her. So what's the lesson being learned here? One, vulnerability and communication. If we were to open up about the things that we're struggling with, I would suspect, and I've experienced firsthand, that we will find that there are so many other people who are walking similar paths, and we can be joined in these journeys together. These two individuals are not only living with depression, but each had hidden their medication from the other person, both in their bedroom, but in separate spots in their bedroom. So communication with one another, but also communication and communing with nature and our Creator. In Japan, doctors are writing prescriptions for something called forest therapy. I hope I say this right, but the Japanese term is Shinrin Yoku, which means forest bathing. The practice of forest bathing is to go for a slow walk in the forest and be mindful. Being mindful means to be present throughout this hike and to use our five senses. So to really take in the sights, smells, how things feel, the sounds we're hearing, and the tastes in the forest. Researchers have found that forest therapy reduces anxiety, depression, anger, confusion, and fatigue, and increases vigor. And it's a lot cheaper on the wallet book. And is it any wonder? Because if you think about the creation story, back in Genesis, we were made for the garden. What could be more therapeutic and connecting than being back in nature? When we're anxious, we're also longing for safety. A few weeks ago, while I was listening to the CBC, they deemed the year 2016 as being the year of anxiety. Many world events have left people feeling increasingly vulnerable and fatalistic. What do we do when not only individuals, but whole populations are feeling anxious? There's a story of two wolves. This is a Cherokee parable. Can you raise your hand if you've ever heard this before? Some of you? Okay. So in this parable, there's this grandfather, and he's telling this story to his grandson. And basically, he says to his grandson, there's this battle going on between two wolves. One is all good, and one is all bad. So the all bad wolf is full of things like evil, hatred, resentment, greed. And then there's this all good wolf, and the all good wolf is full of things like love, compassion, respect, all the things in the world that are good. And this battle is going on between these two wolves, but this same battle is also going on within you and within me. And the grandson thought about this for a moment, and then he said to his grandfather, well, which wolf will win? To which the grandfather replied, the one you feed. Good and bad, love and hate, evil and justice exist. They always have existed. This is nothing new. And they always will exist and coexist. The question is, which one will you feed? Feeding the good wolf in our minds is a form of therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT. CBT teaches individuals how to identify, question, and change unhealthy thoughts by becoming aware of other possibilities. I had mentioned earlier about my first husband, Neil, and how his fears became facts. And when we would go over some of the things that he thought was reality in his mind, which I knew wasn't, and we weren't able to make ground in this space of, you're right, I'm wrong, and there is no moving forward in that space. But what we did was we looked at the language of possibilities, and I would ask him, is it possible that the person meant this? Is it possible that you're actually safe? Is it possible that things are going to turn out better than you might fear they will? And he could say that it was possible, and in that space, we were able to move forward. The name CBT may have been around for a few years, but this practice is as old as biblical times. Philippians 4, verse 6 to 9 says, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds through Christ Jesus. Notice how it doesn't promise an outcome. It offers protection over our minds. It goes on to say, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Again, this is not promising a particular outcome. This is offering refuge in the storm. It's a resilience builder. It's CBT, the practice of feeding the good wolf. I'm going to end by sharing one last story. So recently, our family, like many people, we reach these seasons in our lives, and we had a quite chaotic few weeks. So in these few weeks, our kids, between them, were in the emergency room 3 times. And then one night, after my son woke up and I went to nurse him, and then I thought, well, I'm going to use the washroom before I go back to bed. So I used the washroom and I flushed the toilet, and the toilet just started overflowing. And I was like, Jason, you need to come. And he came running and he shut the water off, and it was okay. But that was the end of us using that upstairs washroom for the next 7 days. And so we had the downstairs washroom, and that was okay. But the downstairs also flooded. So let your children know that if they think it's okay to use wipes when they use the washroom, not to flush them down the toilet. Just putting it out there. And so this other thing happened. I was doing a training program, and on my way to the training program, it's a 2-day training program. On my way there, these 6 emergency vehicles passed me, and everything stopped on the 401, and I was like, okay, I got to get off the 401, and then I got terribly lost. I was 45 minutes late to my own training. It threw off the whole day, and at the end of the training, we were divided into 2 groups, so I told my group what time to show up the next day, while the other trainer told her group the right time to show up the next day, which was 45 minutes earlier than I told my group. And that next morning, I was so anxious because I realized what had happened, and I realized that I needed to go and face the music. And I was not looking forward to it. I was really worried, and I thought, oh boy, I've really messed up. And my husband, Jason, could see that. And as I was leaving that morning, he looked at me, and he said, "Your family will be here when you're done." And all of a sudden, it was just like all this fear and worry and anxiety melted away in the light of knowing that I had something to come back to, regardless of what would happen in that day when I went to face the music. I want you to know that in this community, whether you're single or in a family, whether you're living in the Sunshine State or in the winter in the north, we are here for you. And through our vulnerability, through our connectedness with God, with nature, with each other, we can become a more resilient community, a community that can help one another and help ourselves guard our hearts and our minds through the peace in Christ Jesus. Our battles, whether mental or physical, are catalysts to learning. As we come together this morning for communion, in community with God and one another, may you know whatever you're facing, your greater church family will be here for you when you need them. I'm going to welcome Brandon back up to lead us in communion.
Thanks so much, Shauna. One of the things that Shauna and I talked about as we were preparing for this is wanting to have an opportunity, a specific opportunity, to get together beyond this. And so on this Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, we're going to get together. Sean and I will be here to chat with anyone who wants to continue this conversation, maybe in a smaller environment after some reflection. So we'd invite you to join us here at the church on Tuesday at 7 as well. As we head into a time of communion, I want to read a psalm to you. Psalm 3. It was written by David after he had fled from his son who was attacking him. O Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying of me, God will not deliver him. But you are a shield around me, O Lord. You bestow glory on me and lift up my head. To the Lord I cry aloud, and he answers me from his holy hill. I lie down and sleep. I wake again because the Lord sustains me. I will not fear the tens of thousands drawn up against me on every side. Arise, O Lord, deliver me, O my God. Strike all my enemies on the jaw, break the teeth of the wicked. From the Lord comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people. I'm going to invite the communion servers to come forward and get ready to serve. Once I'm done the introduction here, as we begin to come up to receive communion, we're actually going to play a song for you. And it's a song that I was introduced to on my sabbatical leave. I was out west, and a friend that I connected with, her husband plays in a band that they recorded a couple of albums where they're basically just singing the Psalms. The words are changed slightly, but just very slightly. And this morning, I want you to listen to the song they wrote about Psalm 3. It's a song that we're going to learn and that we're going to sing during the course of this month when we acknowledge the enemies that surround us and when we learn how to cry out to God in the midst of it. They're very raw and real lyrics, coupled this morning with very raw and real communion elements, bread and juice, the basics of life, to match the very raw and real circumstances that we have to navigate in everyday life. And I was reminded as well that when Paul shared with the church the first communion liturgy, he said the Lord Jesus on the night he was betrayed. It was the night he was betrayed. It was a dark time for him too. It was a dark and difficult season in which he took the bread and passed it around and reminded his friends that his body would be broken for them. It was a dark time in his life, a dark season, when he raised the cup and he said, "This cup is a new covenant in my blood," that his blood was shed for the forgiveness of sins. And so as we come forward this morning, let's remember these things. We're going to invite you to come